Thank you very much for being here. This is Mary Kading. I'm a member at Theater in the Round, have been for many years. And a few months ago, I was at a panel discussion for our podcast series, and we were talking to some designers, and one of the people in the audience was Judy Nobles. And I asked her a little about herself and what she did at TRP, and I learned that she was an audio describer. And I have always known we had audio description here for a while anyway, but I really never knew anything about it. And I figured we're doing this podcast series about some of the people who work, especially behind the scenes here, designers and stage managers, and it made me realize that audio description is also a really important part of what TRP and what theaters do to help enhance and interpret performances for audience members with visual impairments. So we're talking today with two audio describers. We have Sharon Bigot, we have Judy Nobles, and we have an audience member who has consented to tell us about her perspective on this as someone who uses these services. We have Rachel Parker. So thank you very much all for being here. I'm just going to kind of go down the list here and just kind of ask each of you briefly to just kind of tell me a little bit about yourself. I'm going to start with you, Sharon. Just tell me, you know, how long have you been an audio describer? Where else do you work? How'd you get involved in this?
So it's difficult to say how long we've been. I think it's been about 10 years. Judy and I were just trying to figure out. We think maybe it's around 2005 that we started. I've been coming to TRP since I was an undergraduate at the U, and I have a degree in pharmacy. I graduated in 1961, so I've been here off and on. And they had something, I think, in one of the brochures about that they were needing people to do audio description. And so they had a little article about that, and so one looked into it and started taking these classes and things. And then I don't think we actually worked for a while because the person who was here, Mari, really didn't want anybody else to do it for a while. She really, it was her job and she liked it. And then as she became more and more ill, actually, and got tired, I think, then we started doing the audio description.
Okay. And Judy, you want to tell us a little about how you came into this?
Well, I saw the same notice that Sharon did. It was in a week program for one of the plays, and my husband and I had been attending regularly for a small number of years and were amazed at the excellent quality of work that this theater does on just a shoestring budget. And we had always given a donation, not some huge thing, but for us within our charitable giving, it was one of our better donations. Mm-hmm. And then my husband had to go into a nursing home, and I was really kind of looking for something that I could do to contribute in lieu of the donation we used to give when I saw the announcement. And I asked Sharon today, I said, do you remember when we started? Because we started at the same time, and she had no more recollection than I did. But I checked my file, and I know we were audio describing regularly, like late 2005,
okay,
06.
All right.
And I get calls occasionally to do it for other small theaters, but when I started and for all these years, I do it here as a volunteer, and I don't have any desire to do it anywhere else. But it does make me look at theater differently.
It must.
Yes. That was one thing that really surprised me, because I've been, well, really ever since I moved to Minnesota in the mid-60s, I have fully taken advantage of the wonderful theater that we have available here. And I was really surprised that I started to notice things and performances that I had never really noticed that much before.
I found that it was unusual that actually when I watched a play, I listened more. And I learned that I wasn't looking as much as I could. And if I was going to be describing to somebody else, they could hear the listening, because I depended on the tone of the actor's voice and all of these kinds of things. Those were the things that were my main clues.
Right.
So I learned to look,
yeah,
which was And I was a docent at the MIA, I still am. And it was a real interesting experience to find out how little I looked at plays.
Huh. Rachel, I understand that you had a lot to do with the fact that we have audio description here. Do you want to tell us a little about that?
Well, in the 80s, there were three of us in the city that were trying to get audio description. It started in Boston, I believe, and some years ago. And this is in the 80s. We wanted to get it to happen here. So we became annoying pains in the butt all over the place and got it started. And one of the earliest theaters was Frank Theater.
Okay.
And the Guthrie was right in there at the beginning. And I don't remember which year, but it's in the mid-80s. And then it branched out. And I've done a certain amount of training of theaters on disability issues and blindness issues. Mm-hmm. And I've participated in training of audio describers. And done advocacy work. I still am sort of on retainer, if you will, at the Guthrie to give them feedback about what's going on with audio description.
Okay.
And it's gotten to the point now where, because I'm getting older, I can't go to as many plays. And I miss it, because I won't go to see a play now if it's not audio described. And luckily, this is the city in the United States that has the most audio description.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And a lot of that's due to the theaters, including this one, and to a really well-organized, cohesive disability community. So the first two people that started with me are gone now, and I miss them.
Okay. Rachel, did you decide that we should have a walkthrough?
The tactile tour,
because I'm getting more and more new people that I'm describing for, and they don't seem to want to do that.
Is the tactile tour, is that unique to TRP, or do other theaters do that?
No, other theaters do it too. And I don't know what to answer to you, Sharon, because
especially men don't seem to want to be doing that.
And I
think they miss out by so much. By
horrible generalization to follow.
I'm sorry to say
I
that.
I think that a lot of men don't want to be seen as having disabilities. And it does, when you're getting a tactile tour, it does call attention to you. People see it.
Let's explain what a tactile tour is.
Oh, that's, I call it the pregame show, where I get a chance to tour the stage and feel the props and check out, you guys can explain more about that than I can, but all I know is I'm the recipient of a wonderful show of what goes on backstage and stuff.
We can look into drawers and all kinds of different things.
You do all the things that audience members are told they're not supposed to do.
You can touch the props, you can touch the clothing, and
you can pet the rhinoceros horn.
You can put your finger in the hole where the bullet is going to come later in the play.
Oh, so you get spoilers sometimes, too.
Some stage managers are much more, well, nobody disallows it, but some stage managers are much more lenient than others. I remember I was audio describing one play, and there were a number of things that if Rachel did not feel it, she would have no idea what this thing was.
Sure.
I mean, it was a weird kind, weird things. And that stage, I mean, Sharon and I both are very aware that wherever you pick something up on a set piece, you have to put it right back
down exactly
where it was, even in the same direction.
Right.
And that particular stage manager followed me around like I was going to steal everything in the set. And
well, there are some things I'd love to steal in the prop department here.
That's true.
I think they've become much more liberal on that kind of thing. At least I haven't had any.
I haven't had. That was the only time I had one that just
they've been pretty good
like
about it. And they've been actually offering things that I didn't realize we would be allowed to touch. So the stage managers have been very cooperative.
So, yeah, they have. So Mary, you said something about a spoiler.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm not representing all blind people, but personally, I'd rather have a spoiler at the beginning than to be sitting there going, what was that about?
Yeah. Well,
this is one thing that comes out in some of the tactile tours. We had one play where something is said, a big deal is made out of the fact that this elderly woman loved bingo. She just lived for bingo games. Mm-hmm. And at one point after she dies, flowers start to be delivered. And one of them is an enormous wreath in the shape of a bingo game. Nothing is said about it, it's just brought in. And this was kind of early on in my audio description, and I thought, there's no way I cannot tell them about this. Yes. Because the piece is brought in, the audience erupts into laughter, and even if I'm trying to explain it at that point, I will be drowned out. Yeah. With that. So there were a couple of things in today's play that I had to tell Rachel about. Mm-hmm. Before they, yeah, ever started, and to get like at one point, three of the characters are lined up and they mime the monkey, see no evil, speak no evil. And it happens again so fast, and there's a big laugh, but there's conversation going on. And I thought, this is one thing I have to tell her. Mm-hmm. As a part of the pre-game show, as, yeah, she calls it. So she said, why don't you just say monkeys? And
then she'll know that's what's happening.
Yeah, there's any number of sight gags that you have to tell ahead of time, because there's no time.
And they're not,
and there's so much noise you can't describe it, and it's too late anyway. You really need...
You want the audience member to get it in the same time everybody else.
Yeah, so they can get it, so you know that this is coming.
Well, and part of the difficulty of being an audio describer is not to step on dialogue.
That's...
Exactly.
That is, and that's where the skill and training and experience comes in.
Now, you just watched a matinee of Rhinoceros today, and I would think this has got to be one of the more challenging plays to audio describe.
I got to intermission when I previewed it, and I looked at my friend, and before I could say anything, she said, good luck audio describing this first
scene. And I said to my son, thank God I'm not describing that play.
How do you prepare? Do you read the script first?
Well, most of the time I don't read the script until after I've previewed it. They always have a script, script that they're going to use for me when I come to preview. Mm-hmm. This one, knowing Theater of the Absurd, I bought a copy of the play knowing it would be changed somewhat. But I read it before, and then I previewed it. I take notes while I'm watching the play. And as I was driving home in despair, thinking this is going to be horrible to try to audio describe, especially the first...
The opening scene.
The scene, which goes on forever, mm-hmm, and you've got people moving in conversations before you've had a chance to identify the voices, so that I don't have to say that constantly. And then you have all these people orbiting around these two conversations. So... I was hoping, sometimes the script helps with this, there'll be a particular word choice that the playwright uses in the stage directions. Mm-hmm. Ionesco did not help at all. you dream that all playwrights might write stage directions like Tennessee Williams, where you've got this beautiful language and exactly the precise word choice. So in this one, I went back to my ancient file and found the program from when the Guthrie did it in 1986. And it was a gold mine of information. Didn't help much with word choice, but at least it gave me a few more perspectives about the play. Okay. And I decided that seeing that first act a second time was not going to help at all.
Once sometimes they come and see a play twice or three times.
Yeah, sometimes people need to do that.
I think one of the other audio describers goes to see a play three times, maybe.
Some people do.
Yeah.
I always get the script right away when I'm going to be doing it. When I make reservations for my seat, I have Greg sends it by email. Mm-hmm. So I print it out. Mm-hmm. So I get that. I have learned not to see the play within the first week.
Because
there was a play where they actually, it was all supposed to be in this prison, and this person was in jail, and they had a chess set, and there's no way he would have had a chess set. So the first time I saw the play, they had the chess set. The next time it was all imaginary because somebody said, that isn't a logical thing. So I try not to see it within the first week or two.
Because sometimes opening night, it's not quite done yet.
No, mm-hmm. and that whole opening weekend often, there's mm-hmm. changes. Mm-hmm. I ask Greg to make sure that I sit opposite where the booth is, mm-hmm. so I see it from a whole different perspective. Mm-hmm. Because one time Mari was ill, and I came at 12 noon to do a 2 o'clock show, mm-hmm. and in the booth, I could not see some action that was going on very close to the booth, so mm-hmm. I had no idea what was happening in this play mm-hmm. to be able to describe to people, because I hadn't seen the play.
I bet I was there, and you did a great job, I bet.
I mean, so there's different kinds of ways that one will be, and then I'll maybe read it beforehand. Probably I'll read the script beforehand, then I'll see the play, then I'll read it again closer to when I'm going to actually describe it.
Wow.
And I actually remember a lot. I mean, I have a mind that kind of, I love stories, and so I remember a lot of details.
I don't remember detail at all, so I always allow one extra weekend between the weekend that I preview it and when I describe it. Only twice has it been absolutely necessary to come back and see part of it again.
Okay.
One was a comedy that was so fast-paced that after I had made my notes when I saw it the first time, while viewing the play and then reading the script and looking for places that I could give information without stepping on lines, mm-hmm. I had to come back and see it again because there was such pinpoint timing on it.
Now, another thing that makes experiencing a show in the arena different is that depending on where you're sitting, you're getting a different experience. Rachel, do you sit in a particular place?
I usually sit in this general area, section A and B.
Okay.
Because the reception to the audio description equipment. And I wonder if we shouldn't, let me finish my sentence, but mm-hmm. The reception to the audio description equipment is better in this area.
Okay.
I've sat in other areas.
And also from A and B, because the audio describer is in the booth, which mm-hmm. is basically over section B.
B.
Is it important to you as audio describers that you are able to see the patron? I mean, do you guys signal to each other?
Or
What you do, hand gestures if you're having trouble, or what do you do?
It's mostly at the beginning. They will speak, and I will let them know I'm picking it up.
Yeah, we ask for them to raise a hand so that we know. Because every once in a while, the equipment isn't working, and I just had a new patron, and I had to come down, and he had it set on the wrong thing because he wasn't waving his hand back.
And
but we should go back to the basics on this. It's an FM system,
mm-hmm.
and there's... I have in my possession a little receiver with earphones,
mm-hmm.
and they have the transmitter up in the booth.
Okay.
And so they speak into it. It gets transmitted out over FM, and I pick it up.
And we just speak through a mic. We mm-hmm. have a big mic, and we just talk in a mic.
I did have one experience where the connection on the mic apparently came loose. And unfortunately, it was a time when I had a friend who said, I'm going to get a headset because I want to hear what it is you do. And mm-hmm. I said, fine, this would be a good play to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once the lights go down, I can't necessarily see a patron sitting there waving her hands mm-hmm. frantically saying, I can't hear you.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came down at intermission, Rachel said, your sound went out right after you finished the pre-play announcements. And of course, my friend is saying, "What's the big deal? You said a few words at the beginning, and
did you fall asleep?"
Oh boy!
So that's when Rachel told me. She said, "This is why many audio describers have two headsets, and on one you are listening to yourself to be sure you're coming through."
Okay.
And I have done that ever since. Thanks, Rachel.
Well, you're welcome. You know, and it's those things happen.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
That stuff happens to our regular sound cues in the booth sometimes, too, or our light cues. I mean, that's part of the reason we go see live theater is because things happen not always as practiced.
The rhinoceros mask may fall off.
Yes.
These kinds of things.
Now, getting back to rhinoceros again, I mean, one of the surprises I guess to some of us, at least in the show, I'd never seen the show before, is that they actually are transforming into rhinoceroses. Mm-hmm. So that's another, I guess, a spoiler. You experienced that ahead of time.
We went into the prop room, and I got to check out the various transformations.
Okay, so you got to feel those
masks.
Feel
the different
masks. Those fantastic masks.
Very cleverly made.
Oh, they're gorgeous. They're just, they're so wonderful. And again, getting back to this show in particular, we've already kind of talked about it, but so much dialogue and so much action going on at the same time. Kudos to you, Judy, for taking it on.
Yes. Well, you get asked,
pretty please.
Yeah, I volunteered for this one. We sent in our wish list.
Okay.
And
we don't always get our wishes.
We don't always get our wishes. Last year, I got three out of my four, but the fourth one was the one that I was really disappointed I didn't get.
Each of you just touch on what kind of show would make your wish list to audio describe. Sharon, go ahead.
I don't know that one has any specific things. Judy doesn't like them, and I like to do the Agatha Christies. I like a mystery, because so often there is something you must describe. Yeah. Otherwise, the person you're describing to isn't going to be able to solve the mystery, so yep. you're hoping that you're going to give them the clues mm-hmm. that will help them solve it. So I like that. But in general, we're just kind of open. I usually only choose one or two. There are 9 plays that TRP does, and there are 3 audio describers. Mm-hmm. And one of the audio describers only does 1 play, and then Judy and I each do 4 plays. Mm-hmm. And so it is kind of nice to just get luck of the draw. I mean, you never really quite know, and you don't know if anybody's even going to come to hear you. It's not a given.
You commit to a certain date.
Yeah. And you're prepared for it. And only twice in all the years have I been fully ready, and I've gotten a call on Friday that said,
nobody's reserved.
We don't need you. Okay. But sometimes I pick because it's a play I particularly like, or in the case of this one, I just thought it would be rather challenging. I didn't dream it would be as challenging as it was.
I had seen it years ago. So
I saw it at the Guthrie.
And I was going to ask for it, and then I was really glad I hadn't.
Rachel, you had seen Rhinoceros
so long ago that it was, all I remember was, I mean, I was in high school.
Okay.
And all I remember was befuddlement. Which has somewhat moderated, but there's still places that I'm still befuddled with this.
It's a very thick, there's just so many layers of things going on in this play, and that, like they were saying in the post-show discussion today, too, there are so many lines, and you can just rediscover things as many times as you listen.
It sounds like the actors are rediscovering each time they perform.
Very, well, very smart group.
It was a really amazing play, and it didn't do any good to have seen it when I was in high school. It's so long ago.
Yeah. Did you do any other preparation ahead of time?
Me?
Yes, to reread it or?
I didn't for this one. I have for some other ones. I've looked up something or.
Okay.
But Theater of the Absurd, there isn't much to do.
No, there isn't.
Just sit and wait. I think that. This is going to sound so sentimental, but I think that the act of being in a play and the act of audio description is such a gift that my responsibility is just to sit and take it in and be grateful.
That's how I feel as an audience member, mm-hmm. especially at TRP, because I know these people are working so hard.
Yes.
And for no money, they're doing it for the love of it, and I think it's the least we can do to give them our full attention and really appreciate what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because what they do is tremendous.
And I get a chance to know more about what they're doing because of these two.
Yes.
And we actually, you find out that each of our patrons has a different kind of thing they really want.
Oh, tell me about
that. I had one fellow, unfortunately he's no longer with us, but he was an older fellow and he liked it to be a little risque. So if I just had him, I could kind of play a little bit to that, because he just got such a chuckle out of that, because I think generally people were trying to kind of clean things up for him and all. And
yeah, that's annoying.
And so it was really kind of fun to be able to do that. And some people really are looking I think Juliet always really wants facial expressions. She's really very interested in that. You know, Rachel likes clothes. And I mean, each person has got a different kind of thing they want, and you don't always know what it is, so you're hoping you're getting what you want. But they're not the same.
Do you chat with the patron ahead of time? You get to know each other.
Oh, we get to know each other. You know, we usually have coffee together or sit around before the play, mm-hmm. and then I come down in intermission to see if anybody needs to go to the bathroom or anything like that, and then we'll do some of that.
So
Rachel can get herself there, but Juliet usually knows somebody else.
One of the toughest.
And then I wait with them at the end to make sure they get their Metro Mobility and all, too, because sometimes the doors are locked and the Metro Mobility people can't come in, and so it gets
one of confusing. My toughest ones was one of the early plays that I audio described, and I had Juliet, who has been blind since birth, mm-hmm. and a young man named Eric, who lost his sight as an adult, mm-hmm. and had worked in theater, mm-hmm. a lot of different aspects of theater. And Juliet says, don't step on a line. If you have to make a choice between telling me what's happening and stepping on a line, don't tell me what's happening. Eric, on the other hand, says, I want to know everything. I want to know what's happening with the lighting. I want to know what's happening, you know, with mm-hmm. facial expressions and movement. Mm-hmm. If you have to make a choice between stepping on a line and telling me, you tell me. I don't care if you step on the line.
So, see, everybody's individual.
Yeah, you get six blind people. You have eight opinions.
That's right.
Of course you do.
Well, and it's really interesting. In a sense, you as an audio describer have to make some creative choices also, not only to play to maybe who your specific audience is, or as an actor does performing in the round, you've got to play to section A and to section F,
right.
and you have to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
But also, do you ever have any dilemmas in terms of maybe giving them, your own interpretation of a character? If you're doing an Agatha Christie play and there's a nasty character who turns out to be innocent, but she's very nasty.
Well, I try not to do an interpretation, but nowadays the playbill no longer says what part these people play. That this is the husband and this is the child and whatever. So when I start, and I find that even as a patron myself, sometimes you're well into the play before you figure out these things. I feel that people who are needing things to be described and are trying to identify voices and all of that don't need to do all of that too. So I actually try to say, so in this play, this person is the father, and this is the relationship.
Yeah, but you don't say this is the bad guy, and this is.
I don't say that, but
I appreciate that.
I really want the relationships because they won't do it anymore. It's not fashionable apparently to tell what parts play because none of the playbills say that anymore.
But if you in the opening sequence of Rhinoceros, there's a conversation happening between John and Berenger, and one is very disheveled and probably hungover, and the other one is very fastidious and looks down
his
nose.
They describe that.
Do they describe their appearance?
Yep.
But then you're listening to the dialogue and you're picking up plenty just from how they're relating to each other.
But usually before the play starts. I remember you saying, I think, Judy, you saying that Berenger is an alcoholic, and that's not a spoiler, and looks at, or his rumpled.
Very disheveled.
Yeah, and rumpled. And those kinds of things are really helpful.
I told her that when I was going through the characters, and I always do the characters not in the order they appear in the program, but either with relationships that they have with each other, with all of the major characters, especially the ones whose voice, every time you hear it, is going to, John's voice is just going to be John's, Berenger's is just going to be Berenger's. And I told them when I was doing Berenger and John, for instance, I knew that there was no time to describe their appearance.
Right.
And so I just said, when we first meet him.
Or something particular, change of clothing that's going to happen, you might say that person is wearing this, but then later in the play that will change to this because it may take too much time to go through
right.
all of that description
right.
and as the play is going on, so it's better to do it ahead
and
of
sometimes
time.
What they change into is part of the tactile tour. It'll be hanging up.
And then, yeah, we can touch those things.
And sometimes I would think that you may tip your patron off to something that other members of the audience who are just not that
yes.
observant may miss.
Well, yeah, I've had any number of people. Yes, a lot of people say they have insights. I mean, if you've had an audio describer, though, the patrons will describe to their seatmates usually. I had a fellow saying that, you know, he said, I love having audio description because I know much more than anybody else, you know, and my friend that's with me,
yeah.
I can tell him some of these things and how this actually is happening.
Yeah.
What's funny is I went to see a movie. I don't go to very many movies that are audio described because they're such low quality movies. They don't do anything that's good. And I went to see Master and Commander.
Oh, yeah.
This is thousands of years ago, right? So this was audio described, and I went with a friend of mine, and we're sitting in the theater, and several of the scenes were filmed what they call artistically. For that, you mean too dark to see anything.
No. Yes.
And so, the audio description was going on in my ear, and I was leaning over and telling Martha what was going on. And I looked around, and there were all these people all gathered around,
trying to
leaning over.
You were the audio describer
for
them. That's fun.
Isn't that funny?
Are there particular playwrights? You mentioned Agatha Christie. Are there particular playwrights? Just all three of you, I'd just like to know that you like to...
I think, Judy, you did a lot of Shakespeare teaching or something, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, but I'm not that... Probably the plays that I have taught a million times, I'm least eager to... see again or audio describe because I've seen them so many times. When I'm putting out in my wish list for here, mm-hmm. I've gotten where occasionally it will be because of particular play. Like I really like Alan Ayckbourn comedies. I think he's very, very funny
mm-hmm.
and it's always kind of challenging to audio describe. But primarily my wish list is who is directing it.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And don't you dare take my idea now, Sharon.
No, I don't. I actually love having Steve just tell me because I learn so much. I never know. You know, so often if you choose something, then you're disappointed that, I wish I'd done this one
instead.
It
was
instead.
Your fault that you chose
you know,
the wrong
so
one.
And so I try not to choose too much because then just the luck of the draw often
yeah.
turns out to be interesting in a play that I never thought about and it turns out to be great fun to
I
learn.
I get mine
you know,
in there immediately. Within 2 days, I find out when my Sunday afternoon discussion series at the Guthrie is, and I say I can do this play and this play and this play on this particular Sunday. So you keep doing that, Sharon.
Okay? No, I don't mind, and I go to a lot of different things too. So I just say that I can't do it on certain days, and then
yeah.
let him mm-hmm. let him decide me.
Let it be fate. We're doing fine for time,
okay.
and we'll wrap up in plenty of time here too. So
and
Rachel,
I, as Sharon said, I can't stand Agatha Christie. To me, you have read and seen one Agatha Christie.
It's
you
like
can
Cirque du Soleil.
You can do them
yeah.
all.
I think
we
should get Dorothy Sayers. That would be fun.
Oh, Dorothy Sayers,
Dorothy
yeah.
Sayers.
But, you know, she didn't adapt them. And Agatha Christie changed her mystery. She didn't use any of her major... She herself never used Miss Marple or Poirot or anything.
Very
and
different from the
she,
books.
From
yeah.
the books, she changed
yeah.
them. She was actually a very good playwright.
But
well,
the
it's actually wonderful.
Are all the same.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful that you don't fight over.
Oh yeah, that's
the same.
One.
They're on the verge. Can you hear?
What about you, Rachel? Are there particular playwrights you like, or types of plays you like, especially here?
Well, I will walk out of my way to see a Shakespeare, and I'm very eclectic. I like anything if it's well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you.
And I've enjoyed coming to Theater in the Round. The one that I remember the most was Foxfire.
Oh, now that was, Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy
right.
did
yeah.
the famous...
Oh,
yeah. yeah, and the people that did it here were great. I don't know why that... that's just coming out of my head. Now, that
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean it's better than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very well done film.
I mean,
very
this
well done
place
here.
Is so amazing about detail.
Mm-hmm.
right now we're sitting where a bunch of stairs sort of conjoined together with the panels. And Foxfire, down in here, they had plants there.
Mm-hmm.
In a little corner that no one would see.
And you're sitting in the front row of Section
right.
A,
yeah.
And basically you, as an audience member, become a part of the set.
Right.
I mean, you're so mm-hmm. close to the set, you literally can reach out and touch
and,
it.
And the only reason I found it was that I had dropped something, I was feeling around for it, and there's these little plants.
Oh.
And that's indicative of this place.
Mm-hmm. And you walk, and everybody has to walk across the set
yeah.
to get to their seat. So you, everyone who sees the show is actually a part of the show in a very real sense, because you do cross the stage.
I think one
to
of the
there.
Most emotional things, they do an excellent job with some very serious, dramatic
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the plays that I had to come back and see the second act again, or at least the end of the second act, was a number of years ago when they did Shadowlands.
Yes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's of course, if you're going to see Shadowlands, you think, how long is it going to take from the beginning of the play until I'm not thinking Anthony Hopkins and
mm-hmm.
Deborah Winger anymore?
Mm-hmm.
You never thought that
no.
in this one. Dan Peterson played C.S. Lewis, and that speech that he gives toward the end, his in a lecture, everybody in the audience was sniffling and wiping their eyes, and I thought, there's no way I can get through this without crying if I don't come see it again. So I came at intermission, watched it again, cried the second time, and then just kept going over the experience in my mind. And I remember you and Juliet both, Rachel,
mm-hmm.
Said, how did you get through
yes.
that last scene without crying? And I said, I saw it twice and thought about it daily for
wow.
a week to that, try to steel myself. It was one of the most emotional moments I've ever had on a in
that,
a theater
that is,
experience.
That is a real difficulty
yeah.
when you get really involved with the play. And the people who do the plays, you're the actors, so often become real people to me,
mm-hmm.
Much more than the Guthrie did, and I think the Guthrie's improved, but it seemed to me so often it was an actor being an actor. I am a great actor and I am acting this part, but here I always felt it was the real person. That
well,
is that is the person. That's it's not an actor
mm-hmm.
playing a part.
Well, each,
it is the person telling me about their life.
Mm-hmm.
Each theater has a different strength. You know, 10,000 Things Theater, I try not to miss anything they do. They're so human in the way they
mm-hmm.
portray things. Everybody has different strengths and weaknesses, and
mm-hmm.
this place has attention to detail and honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And the Guthrie has the skill level that they can be sort of an example. Also, they're very generous because they loan out equipment in their grant to do audio description. They got a bunch of sets of audio description equipment.
Wow.
And they lend that out to any theater that needs it.
Wow.
And they did a major training on audio description just recently. Recently being what, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago? I don't know. And so that's a strength that they have. And I just think that all the theaters in town do a great job.
We are really fortunate.
We are.
Yes, we are. We have fantastic theater here.
Yeah.
Just really, really
and,
good theater.
And I love the Fringe Festival.
Oh,
and
yes.
You
yes,
know,
sure.
and all the different venues that are trying so hard now to be accessible, both to people who are blind or deaf or physically challenged,
mm-hmm.
You know, like power chair users
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important that this kind of an atmosphere is happening here.
Mm-hmm. We are at about 10:02, so we should probably wrap up. Does anybody have any closing thoughts, anything you want us just to say? Or I think we've covered a lot, actually.
I just love theater in the round. I really do. They're a great place.
And if everybody treated their volunteers the way
the administration here does, you would have people lined up to volunteer. I have never felt so appreciated. Mm-hmm. I mean, Steve sends me a birthday card every year, and every year it's different, and every year it's clever, and every year it's funny, and somewhat sarcastic. But they just let you know that they appreciate what you're doing, and that I mean, of course, community theater depends on volunteers, but they do it upright.
Yeah. And they're certainly good to their patrons.
Yes.
So I think we thoroughly enjoy doing the work for them and appreciate their being open to having us do these things, mm-hmm. too.
Well, and obviously everybody at TRP really appreciates the professionalism and the dedication, yes. that people like you bring to all of the different facets that make this place tick. And so I'm just so grateful that we had a chance to talk with you today about this particular facet.
We appreciate your being interested.
Yes. Thank you very much.
I think a lot of people will be interested. So Rachel Parker, Judy Nobles, and Sharon Bigot, audio describers and audience member, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today.
You're certainly welcome.
Thank you.